AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, hour two, the Big E Sports Show rolls on. We are so glad you're with us. Join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. You can always email the show, info@eRadioSports.com and podcastarena.com. My sidekick in studio, hanging out with the Big E tonight, Robert Harris. Give him a follow on social media, at Robo Harris Jr. He's always posting some strong tweets on there, and we're doing a full recap, Super Bowl 53. So, you know, we were talking about in hour one, Bobby, you know, just defensively, what an incredible, you know, matchup that was. But, you know, what about Tom Brady's offense? Does he get too much credit for the Super Bowl win?
I mean,
Julian Edelman
did have a big game.
Okay.
I mean, eight catches, over 100 yards.
Yeah.
He was pretty much the sole receiver in that Patriots offense that was making everything gel, everything work for the Patriots. So, you give Tom Brady a little credit, but I say more of the defense, the pressure that the defense was getting to Jared Goff, that really much pretty much took the cake for the game.
As we step back and we look at the Patriots' success, who do you point to that deserves the most credit for it?
Oh, Bill Belichick. He's the leader. He's the captain. he rounded all those guys up. He found Tom Brady in the sixth round in 2000. So, I mean, he is the captain. He is the guy that you point the finger at, say, you're the GOAT, you're the best coach, six rings. And he has two as a coordinator with the Giants back in the 90s. So, he's done it all.
He is the captain of the ship. And, of course, Bob Glauber was with us, the NFL columnist from the New York Newsday. And he was talking about that, too, as far as, you know, the best coach in the history of the game. I mean, Bobby, you're a young guy. Do you believe that?
I think he is. I know I'm too young to remember Vince Lombardi and all those guys, but I think
we all are.
Yeah, I think we all are. No offense, Biggie. But I think Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time in my generation and in everybody's generation because of how he has founded these guys and the system to make these wideouts be better than what they are on other teams.
What an incredible dynasty. So you really tip your hat to the Patriots as it just continues. And, you know, they're probably going to be the favorite going into next season, but, you know, it could be the Kansas City Chiefs. Talk to me about also a lot of movement taking place with the NBA trade deadline. How did the Rockets do?
The Rockets made a small trade, a three-team trade, and the Rockets acquired Amon Shumpert. He's defensive guy. His threes is okay, but I mean, that's a good trade for the Rockets.
Okay, it's all good. And you know what? Guess what? Mitch Lawrence, host of Sirius XM NBA Radio, NBA columnist. He's going to break it all down. We are really going to get into what went down with the Dallas Mavericks and Harrison Barnes. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Alyssa Walker-Campbell with you. Many different ways to connect. Join us with Twitter at eRadio Sports, podcastarena.com, and info@eRadioSports.com. Well, guess what? Earlier this week, it was National Signing Day, and my guy, we have welcomed him back. That is James Hale, 1400 KREF. You can listen to him online, 10 to 2, Total Sports, and he always has you covered. Good evening, James. It's been a very busy week for you. How are you doing?
Oh, it has been a busy week, and it really, really has. I'm doing great, and it's good to get this recruiting class. But with the new recruiting rules, it never stops. I think the coaches at the University of Oklahoma are taking a couple of days off after signing day, but they got to get back and grind. Heck, they have a junior day on February 23rd, I think it is. And then, of course, spring practice starts in early March. So it never stops. And with kids taking visits now in the spring cycle, And OU has that spring game coming up on April 13th, and they'll have maybe 20 kids in on official visits. Everything has changed on the recruiting clock, and so it never really slows down. The only time off about it, you know, maybe is August or something.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's 365, no doubt about it.
Right.
Well,
right.
Let's talk about Oklahoma. Of course, this past season won their fourth consecutive Big 12 title, second straight Heisman winner, and the big-time transfer arrives in Norman, Oklahoma. How fired up are you about the arrival of Jalen Hurts?
Well, you know, it's one of those deals. Like, I'm a Red Sox fan, right?
Yeah.
So I don't like the Yankees, but I always respected Derek Jeter. And you had to respect the greatness of Jeter, and even though he seemed to come up every inning to hurt the Red Sox, you know, you had to respect what he does. Well, the same thing here. I mean, Oklahoma's main nemesis during this era. I mean, Oklahoma remains a blue blood, and they're playing up to that blue blood level because they are one of the top three or four programs in the country. But they haven't been able to get past Alabama. One of the reasons why is because of guys like Jalen Hurts. So in his situation with Tua, you know, kind of fell out. Then, you know, it got to the situation, you know, then, and I knew Oklahoma's situation, you know, was left to a bunch of guys that haven't played very much. And then when Austin Kendall thought that Kyler Murray might come back, he kind of jumped into the transfer portal, and that kind of shocked OU a little bit. And so when that was developing, Lincoln knew he needed to get some kind of an experience into this quarterback room. If he had to go junior college, okay. But this came up with Jalen Hurts. The Hurts family reached out to OU, and that seemed like a perfect fit. When Jalen came down, OU didn't show him around the campus because he doesn't care about that. He knows OU's got facilities. He knows he can fit in anywhere. He wanted to talk offense. He wanted to talk quarterback room. He wanted to see what Tanner Mordecai looked like. He wanted to see what Spencer Rattler looked like. He wanted to find out from Lincoln Riley if Lincoln thought, with his own skill set, if he could work the offense around him. And when all that was satisfied, once Murray announced that he was going pro one way or the other, you know, Jalen jumped in. And Jalen, I think it's tremendous for OU. He has stepped right in. He hasn't tried to big time anybody. He's a natural leader, so that comes through. He's been great in the off season. He's great in the weight room. He's trying to pick up the offense. CeeDee Lamb has really become a partner of his and trying to help him out. Tanner Mordecai is trying to get him up to speed as well. Spencer Rattler has signed off on it, and Spencer will be there in June to join the competition, and he can't wait. And so it's all good so far, and this gives OU a winning quarterback, a guy that's been on the biggest stage. He's improved as a passer. He's actually going to be the best runner they've had. Kyler Murray was a great runner, but he was a reluctant runner. That's why he slid and some other things. Now, his speed and quickness is something we'll always remember about Kyler Murray at OU. But Jalen Hurts is like Thomas Lott. Think about Oklahoma's great wishbone quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah.
And I use Thomas as an example here. He was a great quarterback from 76 to 78 at OU on some of OU's most talented teams. The most talented team that probably didn't win a national title. That's who Jalen Hurts reminds me of. If Thomas was playing today, that's who he would be. When Jalen Hurts runs downfield, he's going to take on that linebacker. He's going to take on that safety. He's not going to slide. And so they'll add that running game principle, and I think it's going to be interesting to see. But it's been very positive so far, Jalen Hurts being at OU.
Hey, James Hale with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we talk about a National Signing Day, but the fact the arrival of Jalen Hurts. And you're talking about now how he helped guide Alabama to two national championships, 26-2 as a starter. And
right.
I like how you're breaking down how he's already fitting into the culture at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Tell me about, what do you think? I mean, how hot will this offense be?
Well, they've got to replace four starters on the offensive line. That's always hard to do, except that you bet that Bill Beedenbaugh, their outstanding offensive line coach, can get that done. He's known this day was going to happen, that he was going to graduate four guys and two other guys would possibly go out early. And that's exactly what happened. So he's been planning for it. He's been recruiting to it. He's been bringing in four and five-star offensive tackles and offensive guards now for the past two or three years. And he's brought in a junior college offensive lineman in Finley Felix. And I think Finley, you know, has a chance to start at either tackle or guard. We'll see. But it's going to be interesting. The competition's going to be intense. But their skill talent is really set. I mean, CeeDee Lamb's going to lead the wide receiver core. OU just signed the best wide receiver class in the country. Charleston Rambo began to emerge last year, and Grant Calcaterra now will be back for his third year of major playing time at that big slot receiver. And Lee Morris is back, who's been a playmaker at the inside slot receiver as well. Then the running back, the group just got better with the recruiting class, and so all the runners return. So they're loaded on offense, and it's going to be a loaded offense this year. If Jalen can figure it out, which he will, he's a very smart player. So I don't worry about him really figuring things out. But in this offense, how good and how high-flying it's going to be is if he's precise on those wheel routes, those quick slant routes. You know, you got to hit those wide receivers just in the right spot so you can utilize their speed and they can don't have to stop to catch the ball. The same thing for running backs coming out of the backfield. Those slip screens, those bubble screens, they have to be thrown with tremendous velocity on target. And that's been Jalen's weakness a little bit, but he's working with the quarterback guru, the quarterback whisperer, the quarterback savant, and Lincoln Riley. And if Lincoln can't get him up to speed, then nobody can. And what Jalen Hurts is banking on, and this he's banking on this because he's already a fourth or fifth round draft choice in the NFL. He's banking on working with Lincoln to get into that number one or two round slot. And don't bet against him. He's dedicated, and Lincoln is really good at developing quarterbacks.
Okay, host of Total Sports, James Hale with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Also, check him out, Die Hard Sooner Report, Patreon U. And, James, you know, it's interesting, so much talk about this high-profile player in Jalen Hurts. What can you share about Oklahoma's quarterback backup situation, this Spencer Rattler out of Arizona? Understand he was a five-star player.
He was a five-star, and Tanner Mordecai was a four-star coming out of Texas a couple of years ago. And you got a feel for Tanner because, you know, and Austin Kendall, too, who transferred out and is going to West Virginia. Both those guys thought they would be competing against each other for the starting quarterback job, and then Spencer would come in and you'd have to start the competition all over again. Now the way this has come down, you know, now you've got one guy that's transferred, and Tanner Mordecai wants to compete for the job. He's been told he'll be given every chance. And right now he's getting equal reps with Jalen Hurts, you know, in spring. That's pretty good. You know, they have two quarterbacks. They'll split the first team reps. They'll get all the reps on campus because, you know, the other quarterbacks are walk-ons. And they like Tanner Schaefer pretty well, but he's never been put on scholarship and he hasn't played yet. Then you have Spencer rolling in June. So great opportunity for Tanner Mordecai, who can really throw it. I really don't think Hurts throws the ball better than Mordecai. Mordecai's got a great arm. I've been told by both Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield that the guy that threw the best in their room was Tanner Mordecai. Now, Tanner hasn't played. He's played, you know, he's had a couple of series. He's still redshirted this past year. He took advantage of that new rule. But he can really throw it. And Jalen's not going to throw the ball better than him. And I don't think he'll throw the ball better than Spencer Rattler. So the young guys will actually, you know, fly it around a little bit better than Jalen Hurts. But it's that leadership, it's that experience, that ability to run, all the things that, you know, Lincoln can do with a solid running quarterback and things like that. That's going to make Jalen a really good quarterback. But the backups, they have the coaching staff excited. They feel like they're good at quarterback over the next few years.
A lot of folks are excited about the changes that have taken place defensively as we talk about Oklahoma. We are flat out of time. James Hale has been with us. Check him out, Die Hard Sooner Reports, Patreon U, 1400 KREF in Norman, Oklahoma. Total Sports, 10 to 2. He is simply the best. Thank you, Jay. I will talk to you real soon, my friend.
Okay, E, have a great day. Thank you very much.
Of course, much more coming your way here in Hour 1, SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, Friday night, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect with us. You can join us on social media, Twitter, at eRadio Sports, and you can always go back and listen to the entirety of our interview at podcast.com. arena.com and email the show info@eradiosports.com. And as always, we've got to recognize the folks that power all of us at SB Nation, and that is O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think of them for all your car care needs, as they are close, convenient, and known for their everyday low price. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every day. Well, right now, as promised, it is time. We're going to continue to tee it up and go inside the ropes with one of the leading sports psychologists and mental game consultants to some of the best PGA Tour pros. And we are delighted to welcome back to our program. He is amazing, and that is Dr. Gio Valiente. Thanks for joining us on this Friday. Good evening.
It's my pleasure. How are you?
Doing great. We're really excited. The PGA season, it is in full swing. And Dr. Valiente, there are so many storylines we want to hit on tonight. But first, right off the top, let's talk about Ricky Fowler's, his wild win last weekend, and how he was able to shake off, you know, just years of disappointment and to finally walk away a winner at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. You know, Ricky really demonstrated that one of the key characteristics of a pro golfer is your ability to move on quickly after a bad shot or a bad hole. I mean, that's the difference between a pro and an amateur.
Yeah, well, it's not really.
Okay.
The reality is it's the difference between the top pros, the Justin Roses and Dustin Johnsons and Jason Days and Tiger Woods. You know, I think most close observers of the game agree that Ricky won, but he did not close. And those are two really different things. You know, he has a history now of not closing with the lead at big events. And I think he made a triple and a double or two triples. So he won the tournament because he padded the lead on Saturday. But the fundamental question is whether he's going to emerge from this win more or less confident in his ability to close because of how he got it done and because of his history of making big mistakes on Sundays with a lead. Now, I'm hopeful because I love Ricky Fowler. He's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful he says, you know, he takes the positives from it and gets more comfortable in contention on Sundays, especially after what he did last year at the Masters, where he did close. But when golfers sort of limp their way to a finish line the way that he did, and I've talked with hundreds of them, it doesn't always lead to more confidence, even if you get the win.
Well, take us through, what is your mindset when you hit a difficult stretch during a round of golf? I mean, it is one thing to have a good setup, but we've always been told that, you know, you don't want to be too quick trying to get into that next shot to fix, you know, what had just happened. You've got to continue to remain patient.
Well, that's exactly right. And he did that. Listen, he did a lot of good things. I don't want to be overly critical.
Sure.
But you know, when you make a big number early, what you look for in a golfer is two things. What happens to their risk-taking? In other words, do they try to make it all up right away by being really aggressive? And what happens to their tempo? Do they start getting quick? And in the past, Ricky has shown both, that he does get quick, and he does start taking more risk, and then he gets more punished, because that's what great golf courses do, is they punish risk-taking.
Mm-hmm.
But he did a nice job on both fronts in this particular tournament. Not perfect. I don't think anyone would say it was a textbook and clinical way to close. But hey, who am I to be critical? Winning on a PGA Tour is very hard.
Uh-huh.
He did it, but like, I just want to see him do it in the majors. And Sundays like this either help a golfer or hurt a golfer, and I'm hopeful for Ricky that it helped him.
Well, hopefully the narrative will change going forward as we talk about Ricky Fowler and his big win last weekend. We are visiting right now with a master of the mental game. He is amazing, Dr. Gio Valiente, sports psychologist to the PGA's biggest and best players. I picked up a copy of one of his books, and it is titled Fearless Golf, Conquering the Mental Game. It is an amazing read. One of the things I wanted to ask you tonight is, you know, during a round of golf, how important is breathing? You know, you're trying to, you know, get rid of, you know, anything toxic out there and any negativity. Your muscles need oxygen, but just can you talk about the importance of just breathing throughout a round?
Yeah, it's really important. It's important because when you suppress breath, it increases tension. And when you increase tension, it compromises the golf swing, right? So there's a causal chain there. And when golfers, you know, the inverse relationship between confidence and anxiety. And so the more confident you are, the more easily you tend to breathe. And so when we start losing confidence, which everyone does in golf, you start to sort of hold your breath and shallow your breath out, which starts this downward spiral of tension and short swinging and all sorts of bad results. So, you know, one of the things we teach at our Fearless Golf Academies which is called the Fearless Golf Routine, where golfers, you know, take a big breath in and exhale it to in their pre-shot routine.
Hey, Dr. Gio Valiente with us a few more minutes. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Talking about Ricky Fowler's win last weekend, the composure that he demonstrated. A little disappointed, though. We're going to be, you know, on the other end of the spectrum. Sergio Garcia, you know, had a major meltdown in the sandbox, that temper tantrum. What was your reaction after you saw that?
Oh, man. It's Sergio, you know, refusing to grow up. You know, he's had this reputation since he was young, being emotional and impulsive and bratty, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he found a short respite when he fell in love and married. And I think in the golf world, we were hoping that he had found a level of stability and a level of maturity. And obviously not true. A professional doing that is so disrespectful to other professionals. And of course, Sergio making it all about Sergio and doesn't understand that how disrespectful that is to your fellow playing professionals, and that people have to sort of try to play their game while you're doing that. And he still hasn't learned the lesson, obviously, with his contrite little apology, which no one takes seriously. And it's really unfortunate for the game.
Well, Sergio certainly needs more mental discipline going forward. But I think for our listeners tonight, we've got a lot of golf listeners that tune in each week. Dr. Gio, kind of share, how do you develop, you know, positive mental strategies throughout a round of golf? I mean, it's something that can be developed and it can be nurtured. How do you do it?
There's a great book out there. It's called Grit, you know, simply titled Grit.
Mm-hmm.
And talks about mental resilience and how you develop the type of grit required. Because golf's a hard game with a lot of failure.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of mistakes. And the great Bob Rotella said that golf is not a game of perfect. And once you accept that fact, you start to become more accepting of when you aren't perfect in golf. And that's a really important thing. It doesn't mean that you're not striving for excellence. It means that you're tolerant of imperfection. And that's an important trait to have in golf.
Dr. Gio Valiente, sports psychologist, works with PGA's biggest and best players. And this is just something, kind of pull back the curtain, Dr. Gio. I mean, when you're working with the pro, I mean, what is their strategy and their approach when they go into a round of golf, you know, as they devise a game plan to be able to score better? I mean, we all want to be able to think and play like a pro, but, you know, are they thinking the first three holes I need to be at this point, or are they only just playing the shot that's right before them? I mean, what's kind of that mindset for a professional player in a round?
Well, you know, what's the beautiful thing about professional golf is they go through the same things that recreational golfers go through, believe it or not. At their best, they're playing one shot at a time.
Okay.
At their best, they're able to shrug off mistakes, but they're just like you and me. They have good days and bad days. And so that's what the role of a sports psychologist is, try to keep them in a frame of mind mentally where they can have a lot more good days. Because the nature of golf is the same for everybody. It hits everybody in the same place emotionally and psychologically. So, you know, that's the reality of it. So they go through what you go through. That's why Sergio behaved the way he behaved, why Patrick Reed behaved the way he did, the mm-hmm. Ryder Cup. And it's a living thing and an emotional thing for the professional golfer at their best. Guys like Davis Love III and Jason Day and Adam Scott when he was at his best, and Justin Rose right now. They're really great at shrugging off mistakes and letting go of mistakes and moving on to the next shot. And the old cliche in golf, the most important shot is the next one. And when you can internalize that and actually live it, that's when you're living your best life.
And another cliche is the old saying that golf is 90% mental. And you produced a book titled Fearless Golf, Conquering the Mental Game. Share for our listeners tonight a little bit about this book. And, you know, what are some of those traits of champion golfers and how they have been able to conquer the mental game? What's the key?
Yeah, Fearless Golf is a culmination of a 3-year research study, you know, and the common denominator that all golfers face is fear. That's what came out of the research. And so the book is about strategies for how to play fearless golf, how to be an accurate thinker, you know, how to the relationship between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. Like, what do you love about golf? Do you love the game or do you love the score? Because sometimes you get wrapped up in a score and you forget to play the game, right? We talk about the difference between playing golf and playing golf swing, which happens to a lot of golfers. We talk about practice habits, like all the key fundamentals that can help a golfer become a better golfer.
Well, it's one thing to want to play like a champion, but you have to be able to think like one. The title of the book, Fearless Golf, Conquering the Mental Game. Always a true pleasure to catch up with Dr. Gio Valiente, sports psychologist, and works with some of the PGA's biggest and best players. Always a true pleasure. Have a great weekend, and we look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Thank you so much, Dr. Gio.
Thank you, Alyssa. Have a great night.
Absolutely. Much more coming your way at the next generation of sports radio. That is SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, Friday night. Welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Always got to take time to recognize and thank the folks that power all of us at SB Nation. And that is O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think of them for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and they're known for their guaranteed everyday low price. O'Reilly's better parts, better price. Every day. Well, we're going to shift gears completely. It's time to hit the hardwood. The NBA trade deadline is now in the rearview mirror. Some exciting movement that has taken a place. And we're going to zero in on a couple of the deals. And that, of course, is specifically with the Dallas Mavericks. Always a true pleasure to have back with us. And that is Mitch Lawrence. He's always got you covered at Sirius XM NBA Radio. I don't ever turn the dial off that. Hey, Mitch, good to have you.
Well, thanks a lot for having me. How are you doing today, Alyssa? All right?
I'm doing great. It's been a little bit of a whirlwind of a week, and we just wanted you to weigh in on the blockbuster trade with the Dallas Mavericks. Here they start the new year with one of the biggest trades in franchise history as they land Kristaps Porzingis from New York. So your reaction to this big-time move by the Mavs?
Well, you know what? It kind of came out of left field when both of these teams agreed on this deal. And, of course, for Dallas, they're looking to surround, Luka Doncic, who's been had an amazing rookie year. And so they made a move for Porzingis. And it makes a lot of sense, I think, because Porzingis is the type of guy, if he can get back on the court, and he's coming off a torn ACL, which he should be all right with next year. I don't think there's anybody who doubts that he can't return to form. That he had all-star potential here in New York for a couple of years. Things kind of went sour between Kristaps and the organization. But the Mavericks now are totally focused on building around Luka Doncic. He's going to be their key player going forward. And that meant also trading off Dennis Smith Jr. to the Knicks because you couldn't really have both guys in the backcourt because Dennis Smith Jr. needed the ball. And from the Knicks standpoint, the big thing for them is they love to tell you always that they've got a plan to build, but they're very impatient when it comes to turning things around here. They haven't had much success in the last 20 years, only a couple of years, and so this afforded them the chance to get two max free agents, super max free agent players this summer, starting with Kevin Durant. So the trade made sense from both sides. Mavericks obviously have been gunning their team. And to bring in a Porzingis to pair with Luka Doncic, that looks like a pretty good pairing for the next 5-6 years.
Okay, I believe Mav fans, they're fired up about the trade, but is there anything within this trade that concerns you, giving up those two first-round draft choices, picks?
Well, that's always a consideration when you give up future picks because those are assets that you no longer have and you've given them away to the Knicks. I think that there are some people who might have reservations about that, but I'm not one of these guys who totally frets about picks. You could stockpile picks like they did in Philadelphia and other places, but it doesn't mean that you're going to, use them well. It doesn't mean that they're going to pan out to be the players. I think the important thing for Maverick fans is Porzingis has showed, when he's healthy, that he has all-star caliber talent. He has a pretty, his ceiling is pretty high there. He's, over 7 feet. He's still a young guy. You pair him with Doncic. You bring in other people who can shoot the ball around those players, and you'll have to do that. You'll have to get creative maybe, but do it with some, cap room that you have available. And so, yeah, that's the way you compensate if you give away draft picks. And it could still work out very well for the Mavericks.
Host of Sirius XM NBA Radio. He's an NBA columnist based in New York. Sporting News and Forbes, check him out online. Of course, give him a follow, all you Twitter enthusiasts, at Mitch_Lawrence. He will get you covered on the latest within the NBA. I want you to weigh in on what does this trade ultimately do for the Mavericks long term? Are we looking at a potential dynasty down the road with these two players?
Well, that's what Mark Cuban wants. you know, the initial comparison was this could be their second, you know, they had Steve Nash and Dirk Nowitzki, and they were very successful until, obviously, Steve Nash went to Phoenix as a free agent, and Mark Cuban, to this day, blames himself for not, you know, getting Nash to stay and giving him a big-time deal. And so that's what they're kind of comparing these two young players to. Now, we'll see how they pan out. I mean, you know, Steve Nash in Phoenix was a two-time MVP, and Dirk Nowitzki is one of the great players in the history of the sport in terms of scoring. So you're when you mentioned dynasty and that stuff, these players would have to, I'm talking about Porzingis and Doncic, obviously, they would have to rise to that level. Can it be done? Yeah, perhaps, but, you know, let's see. I mean, you know, this is a, you know, we're talking about one guy who's in his first year. As promising as Doncic has been, we'll see where he is down the line, and we'll see if Porzingis can stay out of the trainer's room, which has sometimes for him been a little bit of a question. So the Mavericks certainly hope it's the start of a dynasty, but there's a long way between then and now and then.
Mitch, you're a New York guy. You watched Kristaps and have been up close with him and talked to him. Do you think ultimately this is a better situation for him in Dallas and being under, you know, a future Hall of Fame coach in Rick Carlisle? Long term, what do you think?
Well, you know what, the thing about Porzingis was that he loved being on the Knicks. He loved the fact that he was kind of the king of New York. He loved living in New York and all the trappings that it brought him. But I don't think he ever really was, he never really bought into the Knicks organization in terms of really believing that they could surround him with the type of players that would be needed to win a title. He's been under several regimes. He came in under Phil Jackson, and now it's Steve Mills and Scott Perry. The owner's the same as James Dolan. This is an organization that has not made many right moves here for two decades. And so he had his doubts, Porzingis, about that. But he loved the fact that in New York he was the big thing and the king, kind of the king of the Knicks. So, yeah, I think when he's very much focused on winning. And I think for him to go to a place where you had people in that organization and Mark Cuban, Don Nelson, Rick Carlisle, mm-hmm. who knows what it takes to build a winner, I think from that standpoint, he might rate Dallas behind New York as a city, probably does, but in terms of, am I going to a place where the basketball brain trust, I can trust to that they will get me to, you know, surround us with the right type of talent, I think he would probably be very favorable about that from the standpoint of being traded.
Okay, Mitch, you just mentioned Rick Carlisle, head coach, Dallas Mavericks. How big of a challenge is this for him, you know, past the midpoint of the season, working in new players into the rotation? How does that all work?
Well, you know, Rick's been around. He's been a coach for a long time, very successful. This is going to be something where there are multiple moves that this team made. They've taken advantage of the trade deadline very well. And now they're going to see, you know, how they can get. First of all, they're not going to have Porzingis back. Mm-hmm. We know that. So he's going to be out for the year. So it was like here in New York this year, Alyssa, you really didn't know how far the Knicks were progressing because you were looking at the Porzingis coming back, which he wasn't going to do, and Kevin Knox development. And in Dallas now, it's all about Luka Doncic. So you want to make sure that Luka Doncic continues to play well, continues to grow as a player throughout this end of the season. And then the other guys on the team who you think have a chance to be there, how they develop. But you really don't know anything because you can't really make a huge determination about this team until you get Porzingis on the court. So in this way, the last part of the season from that way, from looking at it that way, is kind of immaterial.
Give us the pulse on Knick fans. I understand that they were pretty freaked out when this all went down. I mean, are they in therapy? I mean, what's going on?
Well, there are a lot of Knicks fans who like the fact that they were trying to build slowly around Porzingis. They had seen what Porzingis can do for them on the court when he played, and they were disappointed that he was traded. They were also disappointed that the relationship had soured. And that had been, you know, something that Porzingis didn't get along with Phil Jackson all the time. They were disappointed from that. There's also, you know, Knicks fans who have seen the Knicks try to land big-time free agents like LeBron James back in 2010, and they have come up short. They are very skeptical that the Knicks can go out and get a Kevin Durant and another player like a Kyrie Irving, even though the Knicks, because of this trade, will have two Supermax slots this summer to go get some of the top players in the sport. There is that, you know, among Knicks fans, there's a kind of a distrust that this organization has the where. They have the money, and they're willing to spend the money. But it seems like the guys in charge just can't get the job done. So they're looking at this move kind of warily, I think, which they should. You know, they've also had, you know, if you look at the great players over in the NBA over the last couple of decades, mm-hmm. the Knicks have never gotten, you know, they tried to get Kobe Bryant. They couldn't get him. They never got Shaquille O'Neal in his prime. and on and on and on. LeBron, we talked about. So that's always been a disappointment. So I think there are some Knicks fans who just like, why didn't we stay with the plan, stay with Porzingis? But you have to remember that the Garden chairman, James Dolan, is impatient. He goes to all the games. The losing drives him up the wall. And if he has a chance to go get two big-time players like Durant and Kyrie, I don't know what kind of chance they have, but in his mind, he thinks he might have a chance and go try to recruit them and bring them to New York to fill the building and get celebrities on Celebrity Row. That's what he's into. So Knicks fans have to kind of go along with that program.
We are so glad you're with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show, many different ways to connect. Twitter, at eRadio Sports. You can go back and listen to our interview, the Big E posting up, Mitch Lawrence, podcastarena.com, and send us an email, info@eradiosports.com. Right now, we're zeroing in on the Dallas Mavericks. And I have to tell you, watching the game on Wednesday night, it was pretty tough to watch, seeing Harrison Barnes, knowing that he was getting traded and sitting on the bench and not playing in that third quarter. I mean, visibly, he looked pretty hurt. He looked betrayed.
Well, you know, here's the thing, and I know this is a big now, this is a big talk of the league, and LeBron James, who has the biggest voice, weighed in on it, and how the players are disrespected, and they want the players should be apprised more, and there's a lot of hardship for these players who get traded because they have to uproot themselves. And you know what? It's all part of the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been covering this league a long time. And, you know, you're an NBA player. First of all, you're one of 450 guys. And the elite players and players who get traded, it is a hardship. But that's part of the deal. That's part of their, you know, occupation. And so teams can trade players. And if it happens to, you know, Harrison Barnes apparently found out before the game and he decided to play. And maybe he's not thrilled about going to Sacramento. Maybe he is. I don't know. But the bottom line I have to remind everybody is players who become NBA players get rewarded very handsomely, and they know that their teams can trade them at basically any point. And that's part of the deal. And it's not like they got thrown out of the league. It's not like they got thrown out of their house. Getting uprooted, I understand that. That's a hardship. But you want to know something? When you're an NBA player, you're so well compensated usually that you should be able to withstand that. And, yeah, if you have to relocate your family, you know what? We all have in our own jobs, we all sometimes have to, buckle up when things don't go our way and adjust. And that's what the NBA player is asked to do. And I don't see why there's this hue and cry among the players now. It's no different than it was in the past. They get treated very well. And if you get traded, unfortunately, that's part of the business. You still have a livelihood. You still make a lot of money. And as long as you perform, you know what? You're still in pretty good shape.
Our NBA news and notes continues with SiriusXM NBA radio host Mitch Lawrence.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We've always got you covered. The NBA trade deadline is now in the rearview mirror, and we're going to rejoin Mitch Lawrence of SiriusXM NBA Radio. I guess what I'm trying to say, Mitch, is could they not have waited till at least after the game?
To alert? Well, I mean, you know what? There, I don't know the reasoning why they told him before the game. And players, you know, you have to ask them. And I don't know in terms of his comments if he was upset by that.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to look. There's an old famous story when I was around the Knicks a lot more than I am today. And Jeff Van Gundy was the coach. He talked about when we asked him, coach of the Knicks, about, you know what, it's the trade deadline. What do you tell your players? Because a lot of times there's a lot of rumors. And he said, I told my, this is back in the days when Shaquille O'Neal was the dominant player in the sport. Jeff Van Gundy said, I tell my player, or do you see Shaquille O'Neal in this locker room? Or any of you guys named Shaquille O'Neal? Okay, here's the deal. Because you're not Shaquille O'Neal, anybody here can get traded.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I can get fired tomorrow too. So that's
right.
The way players,
yep.
Unless you're a LeBron James,
that's right.
Or a Kevin Durant, or a Steph Curry, maybe a James Harden, or a Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, this is pretty considerable these days. You can always be traded. That's the trade. I mean, that's the thing. You have to keep the big picture in mind. Yes, it's a bad, for some players, it's a terrible part of the occupation. But if I'm on the outside and I'm seeing what these players are making and how they're treated overall, okay, you know what? It's one of the drawbacks you have to live with.
So what do you, you just mentioned KD. Talk to me about Kevin Durant telling the media that they got to grow up, despite
right.
all these rumors
well,
in his free agency.
Here,
I mean, he ripped the media.
He did. Here's the question. Here's the way I would have phrased the question,
okay.
Kevin Durant. You haven't talked to us for 9 days. Since that, or at the start of that, mm-hmm. the Knicks made a trade, which with Porzingis, as you probably heard, he'd sit there, you know, Kevin would look at you, and they've opened up enough cap room to bring in you and somebody else. And there is a lot of buzz that you already have a deal in place or you are going to be going to the Knicks as a free agent in July. Now's the time, if you would like, to refute that. How about that's the type of question I would have asked at the press conference. Cobb, would you please comment on the fact that your name has been linked to the Knicks opening? Is there any truth that you will that you're leaning mm-hmm. towards going yep. to the Knicks in July? There's nothing wrong with that. And for him to lash out at the media, he said, when it comes to this type of stuff, I hate to put it this way, he's a moron.
Yeah.
He really is. He should know how the media works. And by the way, he should see from how his teammates deal with the media out there. I'm talking about Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and his coach Steve Kerr. Everybody there has a very good relationship with the media. Kevin Durant has always had a bad relationship where he does not allow the media. He doesn't know what the media's job is. He doesn't want to know what the media's job is. He doesn't allow the media to do its job. He looks upon the media as being there are pains in the butt. They're an annoyance. Kevin Durant should have been sat down by somebody back in Oklahoma City back in the day mm-hmm. and explained to them how the media works. I got no patience for a guy like Kevin Durant. Sorry.
Host of Sirius XM NBA Radio, strong and steady, always bringing those strong opinions. Mitch Lawrence been with us. Give him a follow, Twitter, at Mitch_Lawrence. Always a true pleasure. Mitch, we'll catch up with you real soon. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks for having me on and putting up with me.
That, of course, was Mitch Lawrence. One more time. That, of course, was Mitch Lawrence, host of Sirius XM NBA Radio. A big thank you to all of our amazing guests tonight and our producer, Robert Harris. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. Join us at Twitter, @eRadioSports. And remember, don't drink and drive. So long, everybody.